the better things I ever learned in my life. Makes you a lot of, you know, a lot more self-reliant. The love brevard to death, the scenery, is just breathtaking year round. And the people here, you get such a diverse influx of people in the summer that you can find somebody to talk to anytime you want to. I really like that. It's nice.
Tell us a little bit about your parents, who they were, what their names were, and what kind of work they did.
Okay, my father's name was Robert McCall. He was a night watchman at Brevard College till he died. He was born in Brevard, lived here with my mom until they moved to Murphy, which was in 1952, a year after I was born. And we stayed down there in 1966 and then moved back because my father's mother's health, or my grandmother. And I stayed here till I went in the Army, and then I came back to Brevard, got married, moved back to Tennessee. So, and my mother's family's often down around Murphy. That's one of the reasons we moved down there. We had bought 32 acres of land and a house. It's still in her family. It's not in ours, but it's still in her family. And we came, you know, like I said, back to Brevard because of my grandmother's health, and we stayed here ever since. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of family ties that are our bonds to this area. It's about it.
How did you come to work in the furniture industry? Tell us about that.
I answered an ad in a newspaper, a blind box ad, which is probably the worst kind of thing you can ever do. But they wanted a furniture repairman. I never repaired furniture in my life, but I'd repaired machinery. So I went and talked to them. They put me to work at Silver Furniture in Knoxville, working 50 and 60 and 70 hours a week. And that's how I got started in it. Then they promoted me to a supervisor over a grandfather clock line. I had to reorganize it, and I stayed there till the factory burnt down in 1976.
What was the year that you went to work?
When you 1975 in furniture.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you at that time?
24. The people are, I think, the biggest draw to any industry. It's not just the work. I stayed in woodworking because of the people that surround it. They were more family oriented people. They were not, none of them rich. You can't get rich making furniture unless you're the owner or something like that. But they were all tight knit, and it was a family type atmosphere all the time. You got to know the people, you worked around them, they knew you, and they cared. And that kind of stuck with me, and it stuck with me all the way 20 years later. That's probably the biggest reason I stayed in it and really didn't want to get out.
Why would it be different? Why would an industry like furniture making or woodworking be different in that way?
I've been in textile mills and a lot of other kinds of factories that I went in and looked at machinery and stuff. It's just the people. You don't get that sense of family in those other places. You get more a self-centered individual that wants to work and not be bothered. And in woodworking, it's not that way. I never have been in a woodworking plant that the people didn't really bond close. None of them. And I think it's the character of the people. It's more or less a trade than a job. It's something that most of them have learned or over a period of time, not just going to a foundry or an automobile plant. You don't find that. The only different place that I've seen was the Saturn plant in Tennessee. Now, those people are bonded together just like the woodworkers. That's the only exception that I've ever seen. They take the time to know each other as people rather than as a number or somebody doing a job. And it rolls from the top of the organization all the way down. Most woodworking plants, the guys, all of them are out on the floor talking to you and seeing how you're doing. No other manufacturing facility I've ever been in does that. They're too involved in production, and textiles are definitely involved in production. It's piece rate this, if you don't get this, you don't get that. Most woodworking plants are not. It's a relaxed atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, one of the reasons that the people in North Carolina do so good at it. They're more homey type people. The people up north, you've been up north and even out west, it's the same thing. They don't present themselves as outgoing people. The people in woodworking do. It's just a strange occupation.
Now, you mentioned going to work for the Silva. Silver,
S-I-L-V-E-R, furniture company.
Okay, in
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville, Tennessee, excuse me. And shortly thereafter, you were promoted to a supervisor of the
Grandfather Clock Line. Yeah.
How long were you there before you were promoted?
I was there 3 months. And I stayed on the Grandfather Clock Line 3 months, and I was promoted to the frame assembly and sanding department, which was going from 12 people to 44 people on two different floors. And I'd been there about run it for 6 months when the plant burned completely to the ground. It was 410 people in the plant when it burnt down, and not one person got hurt. Not a one. And it went to the ground in 45 minutes. I was the only one. I guess it got hurt, and I feel busted my butt. I'm a metal catwalk, but I guess that was it. My pride was hurt. That was about it. Mm-hmm. But it was.
But everyone got out.
Everybody got out. Silver furniture, when I first went there, was a lot like white. The building was the wooden structure, like, you know, the back mm-hmm. white part of it was. Wooden floors, same old buggies that you had to push and bust your back to roll, and made the occasional tables. That's all they made. There was no high-end furniture. They were low to middle occasional manufacturer. They're still in business. They're still doing good. Place is still growing. And basically the same people I worked with are still there. They've been there 18, 19 years. But they're still a tight-knit group from management all the way to the people that sweep the floor. Everybody knows everybody. They've never gotten too big.
Is it a family-owned business?
Yes, it is. Carl Silver owns the whole thing.
How did production there, how does production there, as you remember it, or did production there, resemble production and work at the White Furniture
Company? It didn't. It was a higher-paced production there. We had, any company's got to make so many pieces to pay the bills, and that's a hard point to get across to any employee, that when you say you've got to make so many pieces, they assume you're on piece rate or something like that, but you have to make so much to pay the bills. We had 140 employees at Silver, and we produced anywhere from 600 to 800 pieces of furniture a day. The dollar value was nowhere close to what white was. Nowhere close, because you're talking a $40 and $50 table versus a $2,000 and $3,000 armoire at a year or a dining room table. The people were more city than our city type people than they were at White. White were more country. The people at White were a lot more open than the people at Silver. I think these people in East Tennessee are kind of clannish anyway, and they don't they don't like strangers as well as they do down in Maven, and I can attest to that real well. But they didn't associate with a lot of people that were out of their area of work. If you worked there, they talked to you and you became friends with them, but other than that, they didn't go out and hunt friends like they do down in Maven. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest one difference I know in the two companies.
Well, we might come back to this a little bit and compare that, but I'd like to move on to sort of the chronology of your life and what you were doing from the time you went to work there. So tell us a little bit about tell us the year you left Silver and sort of where you went next.
Okay, I left Silver in August 25th of 1986. I went to work for Home Place Kitchen Cabinets out of Goshen, Indiana. They started up a plant in Clinton, Tennessee, to make all varieties of kitchen cabinets. Production goal was like 1,500 a day. And I helped start that plant up, set the machines, do the whole bit, lay it out, train the people. We had 247 employees. Now those 247, we had 10 actually trained before they came to work, which was saying something for the supervisors and management of that company. Mm-hmm. Plant manager, never been in woodworking. He was a salesman. Production inventory control person was doing it in a sewing plant. Nobody other than four supervisors and four or five hourly employees actually had any experience in woodworking. So we started the whole thing up and virtually trained everybody. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of training to do ourselves. I took hours and hours and hours of MRP training, human relations training. I had to learn their whole computer system was completely different than the MRP to run company, which meant everything had to be done on computer, everything had to be accounted for, everything had to be done so-so. We started the whole thing up at the same time. It took the plant in Indiana, they had two plants up there employing 1,100 people. It took them a year and a half to get to 98% accuracy. We reached it in less than a year and maintained it, which meant we didn't have to take an inventory. And the regimentation and things that had to be done was taught from the start. It wasn't started halfway through, and it was the easiest probably startup of any plant I've ever seen. People were basically the same as people in Knoxville. You're talking 20 miles away. A little bit more country, a little bit more open, and willing to help the company and anybody that was mm-hmm. there. It's a lot of good people in both Silver and mm-hmm. Homecrest. I worked there until December of 89 when they laid the whole second shift off and half the first, and I was one of the ones that got laid off because of the kitchen cabinet business just went to nothing. And I was sitting at the house drawing unemployment when Robin Hart called me, told me he wanted me to go back to work. He had heard I was sitting on my butt and he didn't enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And he called me to come to Maven.
Now, does that mean Robin was it?
Robin was the plant manager at Silver.
At Silver?
Mm-hmm. That's where I met Robin. I worked for Robin for 9 years before I ever came to Maven. And we've been good friends ever since. I met Robin in 78. 1978. So through the whole time I worked at Homecrest, I'd go down there and visit, or he'd come up, or mm-hmm. just anything that happened, we stayed in touch. Everybody down there did. It was like a family deal. Mm-hmm. You didn't want to get lost from the people, and I guess that's where I learned part of the way I am. I like mm-hmm. to stay in touch with the people I like and become friends with.
I want to back up just a little bit. Prior to going to Silver, were you trained in any way, or did you receive much of your training there?
I was completely ignorant of furniture when I went in the door at Silver. I had worked at a textile plant, drove a tractor and trailer in the service, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I had no training whatsoever, none. I know what furniture looked like, but I sure didn't know how to make it or repair it or do anything with it, mm-hmm. nothing. I couldn't have told you the color of wood or the kind of wood if you'd hit me in the head with it.
And then prior going to HomeQuest, though, you did receive some formal training. And I assume that HomeQuest sent you to provide it for them.
HomeQuest, HomePress.
HomeQuest, C-R-E-S-T.
H-O-M-E-C-R-E-S-T.
Mm-hmm. The only formal training I had was State Tech came out and gave us a human relations course at Silver. I was going to college and working while I was at Silver at night. I went to school at night on the GI Bill and got my associate degree while working 50 and 60 hours a week. So that's the formal training I got, was in school plus work. And then probably the most formal and significant training I got as far as at any company was at Homecrest, because I went to Dale Carnegie Management course mm-hmm. at Homecrest, plus we had the structured courses in MRP, structured courses in human relations that I had to go to every week, three times a week for an hour, 2 hours a day, and that was ongoing through the whole 3 years. It didn't stop. Mm-hmm.
What is MRP?
Management Resource Planning.
Okay.
or manufacturing resource planning. You can call it either way. One's MRP1, one's MRP2. It's more or less total resource planning when it's MRP2. You plan the people, you plan the stuff, the materials, the flow, everything is done by the computer. It takes a lot of time to lay it out and set it up, but once it gets set up, the supervisor's job is just to talk to the people and check. You don't have to go set things up for people, and you don't have to run parts down. It's already there. They know what to run. You don't tell them. They'll tell you. It makes it easy. That's the easiest supervisor job I ever had. I didn't have to chase parts, didn't have to hunt nothing. They had a list generated by the computer. Parts in order that they need to run. My main job was the human relations side of it and taking care of the little troublesome parts that popped up every once in a while. If somebody special ordered something, we had to have it, had everything else, just getting it around, that's it. The main thing they wanted their supervisors to do was communicate with the people, which is what they should do. And I guess the one thing that I learned from that, and probably the biggest thing I learned from Dale Carnegie, was about me. You got to be willing to talk to people the way you want to be talking to, not just what the company wants them to hear, but you got to treat them like a person. They are a person. They're not a number. They're not a piece of wood. You can't go beat them over the head and throw them through the plant. You got to treat them like people. You got to get the respect. And if you do that, they'll work for you. You don't have to do much to make a person work. Just ask his name, talk to him every day, or every time you see him, and every time you see him, whether it's at work or away from work, you say something to him. That's just good human kindness. That gets work done.
There's a lot I'd like to ask you about this, actually, but I want to move on and get to white furniture.
Yeah.
But I do have one quick question, sort of with the silver to home crest connection. That was, you didn't tell us why you left silver after.
Let's see. 3,000, well, let's put it in terms of weekly income, supporting a family and one kid and one on the way at the time. Well, Amanda was born in, but two kids. I went from making $455 a week to making $580 a week. Mm-hmm. That's the reason I left silver. It wasn't because of the people. The money was good. The benefits were good or better. And, you know, it was the hardest one decision to leave that company that I have ever made in my life. That's no joke. I cried when I left that place because of the ties I had. It was not something I thought I was bettering myself. I had a chance to go on and increase my knowledge of woodwork and increase my education. They were paying for it and increase my earning potential for my family. You know, all the right reasons. And it was the one thing I can truthfully say the day I left, or they gave me a farewell dinner, and it got me, I've been there like 8 years and 9 months. They gave me a silver dollar for every year I've been there. They gave me a Seiko wristwatch. And Robin was supposed to give me the wristwatch. And he couldn't do it. He's sitting in the back crying. He had somebody else bring it up, give it to me. He was that kind of person. That's the reason I like Robin Hart as a person. I like Robin Hart as a boss. You have to earn his respect. And I was just as damn bullheaded and stubborn as he was. That's why he liked me. And that's no joke. I bucked him probably more than anybody in his life. But he was a good man. And he's seen through my, I guess, rough and crude exterior and seen something he liked somewhere. But the biggest thing I think it was is he's seen somebody that liked people. Mm-hmm. That's what it takes. But if you'd have seen him then, you wouldn't have known him.
Do you remember the day you went to him and told him you were leaving silver, which was the first time you all, you know,
yeah,
left parts of the plant?
Yeah, I do. I went to him and told him, and he didn't say a word. He said, "You made up your mind?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, okay, I'll talk to you later." And I left. And I told him I was giving him 2 weeks' notice. And he said, "I'll talk to you next week." And this was like on Monday. And the next Thursday he called in. He said, "Don," he said, "I'm not going to slap you in the face and offer you more money. You know, if I could do that now, why couldn't I have done it months ago or weeks ago or a year ago?" He said, "You're a good worker. We hate to lose you. And I think you're doing better for yourself." And that meant a lot to me. He didn't try to buy me back. He seen that I was doing better for myself and better than he could give me. I guess that's when I gained a lot of respect for that man right there. He didn't. He explained why, and he went into detail. And he said, "You know, I could have gave you the money. $50 a week wouldn't make any difference now." And I said, "No, I've done made the decision." He said, "I knew that." He said, "You made the decision before you ever come and told me." And I said, "Yes." And I said, "I'm not backing down. I'm not changing my mind, even for $50 more or even $100 more a week, because I've got a lot more gain than that." And I did have. But Robin was a many-faceted person. At work, he was one person, and away from work, he was another. And a lot of the managers have to be that way, me included. You have to maintain a presence on the job and a stature that the company requires, and truthfully, anybody should require themselves. They're going to take responsibility. But away from work, he was one of the best kind-hearted men I've ever seen. One of the most fun to be around. Camping, hunting, fishing. It was just a lot of fun. Two completely different sides to the same person. And that's the reason, I guess, that it hurt me so much to leave Robin. And everybody there was the same way. It was a friendship that was built over 9 years that I don't want to break yet. And I'm not going to break yet. I still go back down there and I still see those people. A lot of the same people are still, well, the supervisory staff has had one change. That was Robin left. That was it. The rest of them are still there. Most of the Ireland employees are still there. And will be there. It's just, why at 100 years later? That's, I guess, the easiest way to put it. Why it's 100 years later. The people built the bonds and they stayed together and they built the friendships that was built over probably the same period of time as White. That was, Atkins Furniture was started in 1895. Basically the same time, which turned out to be over the period of years silver. After it had been bought and sold a couple of times. Same people, same general background, I guess.
Let's move forward now, back to the time where you've been at Homecrest and you get word that they're closing down the kitchen cabinet line that you're on and you're out of work for the first time. Do you remember that closing, the closing of your line and sort of being laid off?
Yeah, I do.
What that was like for you?
It was probably more hurt than anything else. It's kind of felt like I'd been violated myself into a point because I didn't know it was coming. I had to lay the whole second shift off, and I laid part of the first shift off. But it was something I expected and something I didn't expect, if you can understand that. You know, deep down inside, I knew it was coming and had to, dollar-wise. But you don't really get to joke until it happens. And when they called me in the office and said, "We're going to give you layoff slip, you can draw your unemployment, it will be just like everybody else's, uncontested. Go up, file, draw," which is what I done. But it was a jolt. It was, after putting so much work into that place, getting it started, getting everybody trained, and then seeing them go out the door. But the thing about it was, a layoff, you don't get the feeling that it's permanent. You know, you got that hope way out in left field somewhere that you're going to get called back, and you don't really know when it was. Most of the people that got laid off before me or that I laid off are back at work because the woodworking industry in general has picked back up. They expanded their product line and got into different things rather than just totally kitchen cabinets. But they put most of them back to work within 2 years.
I've heard from a lot of workers on the various lines of White Furniture, but what it was like to find out they were unemployed. Is it different for someone who's in a supervisor position?
Not in the least bit. It's more so, I think it's a little bit harder on them. I'm going to tell you why. You're seeing people go out the door, and you know they're basically their family, their life, their lifestyle, what they've counted on for income. And you know that they've been doing this for so long. And, you know, they got laid off, but they got fired at the same time. It was permanent. And you don't have any hope. It's gone. You know you have to get out and find a job, which probably in all reality is better than the layoff. If, you know, if there's no plan on ever being called back, and you don't know that when you get laid off. But it took so... to see those people just feather out of there. You could see them the last time they hit that clock. It's just like, you know, their feet dropped on the floor and their heart. And you could just see the worry. And up until that day, it would build up. And when they hit that clock for the last time, you could just see it. It just come out. I mean, and I seen it probably more than I wanted to, because we were right there at the clock. And every time two or three more go and two or three more go, and you say goodbye and it hurts, and you do it over and over and over and over. It's not just to the people in your department, to the people on the plant, because you know everybody. And you know that some of them will never be able to do anything else. Some of them are too old to go anywhere else. They're working because they had to. They couldn't afford to live on Social Security or didn't have enough income to live without that job. And you know there's no other way they're going to get another one. Without, unless it's a night watchman or sweeping the floor somewhere. That's the part that really hurts. You have to understand what it means to be a supervisor, number one. You have a responsibility, and a company has a responsibility to each and every person that works for you, to show them that you're going to do the best thing that you can do for them. You're going to keep them trained. You're going to keep them employed. You're not going to pull the feet out from under them. You know that job is what supports their family, pays their bills, puts their kids through school, buys their house, pays their taxes, buys the food to eat. You have to understand it. And that's... when you understand that, you can be a good supervisor. But when you understand that and you have something happen like shutting down that plant, every one of them that goes out the door, you know that their whole life has changed completely. You know that the company you work for pulled a rug out from under. It's not a good feeling. Not by a long shot. And I mean, I felt it.
What did you do that when you got that word? What, I mean, you personally, what was it like for you? And tell us a little bit about maybe the very first day, if you told your family and that sort of thing, and then take us forward a little bit through that time period until you hear from Robin Hart again.
Well, the very first day, I didn't tell anybody other than the people that already knew it, and they told us 30 or so minutes before they told everybody else. That's from middle management all the way down, which was, you know, Marshall, Jackie, all the way down. They told us all at the same time, which was 30 minutes before they told the hiring employees. I guess the one thing about the whole, that day that I'll remember more than anything else, is I went up in the front office and Kay was sitting there on the steps going down into Robin's office crying. And I picked her up and hugged her. I said, "Just hold on." And she sat there and cried. She looked up at me with them big old brown eyes and said, "What am I going to do about my two kids?" I'll never forget that. And I know I have enough self-confidence to know I can work doing something to support myself. It didn't really scare me as much as it did a lot of other people. I can do other things, and I have enough confidence in myself to do it. I know. Don't take a whole lot of money for a family of one. Mm-hmm. It does for a bigger family. It didn't surprise me, though. Mm-hmm. Setting down Hillsborough didn't surprise me. I knew that Hillsborough was coming. I just didn't figure that Mabin plant would be as close as it was. As a matter of fact, I told Bill Oxley, which was engineer time, And I got called to Robin's office for telling her, because nobody was supposed to know it. I said, you mark my words, within 3 months, they'll be shutting down the doors at the Hillsport plant for 2 months and 2 weeks. They hadn't even told people. Nobody knew it except for Robin and Bill.
Mm-hmm. Who were you telling this to?
Bill Oslin.
We jumped to the white furniture.
Yeah.
And I got called in Robin's office, and Robin asked me where I'd heard it, and I told him I'd just BS off the floor. It was just a feeling I had. I knew that it did not make money sense to run it the way they were running it, and run two plants that close together with as many people as they had and not producing more product than they did. It was just common business knowledge, I guess. It kind of, I seen the door open before it actually opened on that one. And I figured it would. At what?
Mm-hmm. It's not clear to me. Did you say that you suspected this and told folks, or that there was this talk on the floor that everyone suspected?
It was just, let's put it this way. If you want fish to bite, you feed them a worm.
Mm-hmm. Get that away from me. Clanging on his coffee cup and we'll take it away.
Yes, beating you over the head with it. I did. It was just, what I said to Bill was a way of fishing. Mm-hmm. And I done it to get a reaction, mm-hmm. which is kind of sneaky, but that's what I done. And it got a reaction, one that I didn't count on. But I knew it had to come.
And what was his position?
Robin Hart was president.
Oh, that wasn't Robin. It was Bill, I guess.
Bill was head engineer.
I really would like to talk a good deal about the closing of White Furniture, but I want to back up a little bit, sort of feel like just hold off some and sort of get you into White Furniture and your job there. So let me ask you a couple of the early questions, and then we'll be into the factory and talk about it. After you left Homecrest, you're out of work for some time.
No, 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
Didn't even get a decent vacation.
Then you get a call from Robin Hart.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, he called me. Matter of fact, I don't even know how he came to find out that I was unemployed, unless he got a hold of one of the guys at Silver and talked to them. Mm-hmm. But he called me and asked me to come down there and said he had a job he wanted to give me. And I asked him about it. And I said, come down here, spend 2 or 3 days. We'll put you up in a hotel. You can look around, check the plan out, do the whole thing. If you don't like it, you can go back to Tennessee and stay. But went down there. Went through the Hillsboro plant first, and went through the Melbourne plant. Met Jackie Hodges and Richard Pickford. Talked to them. They both liked me. Talked to Robin, and we talked about money. And everybody basically said, we want him. And I said, well, I'll be happy to go to work for you. It was just probably the biggest move I'd made in my life since the Army. And I think probably one of the best moves I made in my life, as far as being a person it was.
What did Robin tell you about the situation at the plant, the history?
Well, he told me that he was...
The purchase.
Well, the purchase that were white was bought by Hickory Manufacturing, which is what it was at that time. There wasn't a whole lot said about it. I was more concerned with... the questions I asked were about Hickory Manufacturing. I knew they owned it. Mm-hmm. And I'd done a little bit of research. I knew they made period furniture. I'd done that before everyone up there. And, you walk into a door of a company that's been running almost continuously for 100 years, your job security kind of feels fairly certain. You know, you don't think it's going to shut down in 3 years. The questions I had to ask were about the people, about the supervisors, what Robin expected of me, and which plant I was going to be at, because I'd been in both of them. He said, I've got 3 or 4 openings, and you can fill any of them. He said, you've done everything that I need done. But I guess when I first went to White, I spent 2 weeks in Hillsboro, just more or less learning what they made and seeing how they made it. And I kind of got the feeling at that time something was going to happen because of what Robin told me one day on the floor. Because Robin's pretty straightforward. I seen a person setting up a fixture in the cabinet room that was probably one of the worst setups I'd ever seen in my life. worst run, worst setup, material-wise, walking-wise, the whole bit. And I said, Robin, you want me to go and help? And he said, no, you're going up to Maven plant. He said, they'll get it worked out, or I'll get it worked out for them. Just leave them alone. And that wasn't like the Robin Hart that I knew. Because he knew that I knew how to do the setup bit because I'd done it in the cabinet room at Silver, because I run it. But when he told me that, I kind of had a sneaky feeling something was going on that he didn't want me to stay down there for. And I never figured it out till after they shut the doors. And I hadn't really figured it out till I sat and thought about it and had time to reflect. You know, hindsight's 20/20, and mine sometimes is 15/15 when it's far back. But it kind of made me think then, but it just kind of stuck in the back of my mind, why not stop and help? But I guess he meant for me to be a Mebbin and go in and do a little straightening out there, which I don't know if I did or not, but I tried. Mm-hmm. About got fired at White. So
when this incident happened about correcting the setup, that was in your second or third week there?
Yeah, second week.
So then you go on to the Mebbin plant where you begin to work.
I spent 4 weeks.
Tell us about the early days there.
Well, the early days there, I think everybody thought that I was Robin's nephew. That's no joke. I got accused of that more than anything. Somebody, I don't know who it was. I guess it was Jackie or somebody told him I was kin to Robin, but I wasn't. But I started out in the lumber yard, and I've never been around dry kill operations. That's what started me out learning it, and we loaded kills and unloaded kills, and I learned how to run the kills enough to get by, and that was about it. Not real good, but enough to have a working knowledge. And then we went into the machine room or rough mill, which I had a pretty good knowledge of, you know, cut off saws and rip saws and gluing. I'd done that part of it anyway, at least at several, with the molders, tenant machines, all the machinery that they had at some stage in my career I'd been around or worked on. And I stayed there like 2 or 3 weeks in the rough mill, 2 or 3 weeks up in finish mill, which was up where John Fuque was and Zeb and all them. And then they took me back and put me over there. The molders, 2 tenant machines, CNC routers, table saws, and boring machine or something. But I had a clash with Pickford, and I think that got fired. He wanted to fire me, and Robin wouldn't let him. And I told him. And then, you know, the one thing I respected about that, the whole thing, was that he came back and apologized to me. And Robin didn't tell him to. He didn't have to. He said it was my mistake, and it was both under a little stress when we had the altercation and got resulted to words. But
Did you, in those early days, did you have Robin's ear?
No. I never did have Robin's ear as far as running that plant. I didn't want to.
Why?
Because that's what everybody thought. That's what everybody expected. And that's no joke. I got accused of it a whole lot more than ever happened. Robin, if he asked me a straightforward question, I would give him a straightforward answer. I wouldn't lie to him, but I didn't run to Robin. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any reason to. I had concern myself of running my department and making it do what it needed to do instead of running to Robin and ratting on anybody. I didn't need to do that. The one thing that, if he asked me something straightforward, I didn't back up from it, and I wasn't going to lie to him about it. It just wasn't worth it, because he knew. When he asked you a question, he knew the answer before he asked you. I know him too well.
How about outside of work? Did you ever socialize with him and keep that friendship that y'all had built?
No.
Going in that way?
Not till after the plant was closing down, when they found out we were actually shutting the doors. I went over a couple times with Bill Oxley, and we'd sit and talk. More or less, it's farewell type deal with Robin. Even socialize with him away from work. I did at Silver. We'd go hunting and fishing, but never did it at home. But everybody did down there, so it wasn't just, you know, wasn't just me. It's the whole supervisory staff. But I, you know, as far as that, I think at one time I got blamed for Hillsborough shutting down, I don't know, by some people, and I didn't like that. But it, I read between the lines pretty good in Hillsborough, and that's basically what it was, just an educated guesstimation.
Don, I really want to talk more about you and less about Robin, but I have one detailed question about Robin.
Do it.
He came from the silver plant. Did he go directly to Red Furniture?
Yes.
And do you know what year that was?
1987. August the 25th, 1987, because I had left Silver 1 year to the day when he left Silver, because I went to his farewell dinner at Silver. And I mean, it was 1 week, 1 year to the week. That's, I guess that's one of the reasons I remember it. I want to say something about Robin that a lot of people didn't understand, man. But a lot of people, the day he left Silver, he went down to an old loading dock behind the finishing room that had water in it about that deep. And he sat down there and cried like a big baby. And even when he asked me, he said, "You're gone already. You think I'm doing right?" I said, "If you think you're doing right, you're doing right." He said, "It hurts." And there's only three people seen him do that. Me and two other supervisors at Silver. He had a genuine care for the people at Silver, and he had a genuine care for the people at White. You're going to be told otherwise by a lot of people, but I can tell you right now, I know better. It wasn't something that he wanted to do. He was told. He was told a couple of months in advance of everybody else he had to be. He had to lay the groundwork. But he also had a responsibility to the man he worked for and to the company he worked for, and that he had to perform. That goes with the job. Whether you want to do it or not, you do it, hopefully, in the easiest way possible. And you have to understand the responsibility, and you have to have been through it. You know, anybody could have walked in there and shut the plant down and said, "You're all fired," or "You're gone this day and this day and this day," and not cared and not fought and kept people on as long as he did. A lot of people were kept there longer than they were needed. I think anybody, if you ask anybody, they'll tell you the same thing. The ones that worked for him, he worked for them, and that was everybody there. I think probably the one reason that Randy Austin was brought in to do a job that somebody else wouldn't do was Richard Hinkle. Richard Hinkle fought to keep that plant open, and when he didn't, succumbed to the big man in Chicago, he was said bye to, and a man that would do the job was brought in to do it. And that's basically, to me, what happened. They...
Do you think when Robin was hired, he had any sense? And I realize this is a subjective question that I'm asking. You know what I'm going to ask, because you're nodding your head already, so go ahead and answer.
I'm going to tell you, Robin did not know when he was hired that that plant was going to be shut down. When he left Silver, the one thing he said, he says, "I've got 5.5 years till I retire, and I'm going to make it right there at White." That was his last words. Man's not going to say that and then go shut down a plant. Robin had shut down a Singer plant. That's where he got one of the reputation, I guess, for shutting down plants, because he told it as a joke, and it hurt him to tell it, but he had shut down a Singer plant and another plant for somebody else. I don't know who the other one was.
That was before he went to Silver.
Yeah. He did not shut down the Silver plant. It's still up and running good. But he did shut down a Singer plant, because Singer Furniture sold off about half their woodworking at one time. They had a bunch of it, and they sold a bunch of it off to Kincaid and Broyhill and Bassett and everybody else. And he did shut down two plants. He shut down the White plant, and he shut down one other. But if you'll look, and Bill, you were there, the way it was shut down and the way it was handled, do you think it... I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think it could have been done any different or any more humanely? I don't. You know, it's a lot of hurt for a lot of people, and it, you have to stop and look at the way he done it. And you have to think about that really hard. You know, the law required 60 days, but most of the people got 3, 4 months. Some of them 4.5, 5 months. Some of them didn't leave our Lord June from, then we found out in December, I guess. Or November. And they were still there in June of the next year. He drug it as long as he could drag it and keep people working. He done it. It wasn't, you know, they were losing money by keeping people there. They were making money in a way and losing money in a way because they really didn't have that much product going out the door. The repairs were there and shipping stuff out and stripping machinery and stuff doing like that. But he kept everybody there as long as he could. He tried to give them a good, decent chance. And I mean everybody to find a job. And I've never talked to him about this, but I know him well enough to know that. And I understand him well enough to know that. And I know who's going to get the bum rap for the whole thing, and it's going to be a lot of it's going to be him.
How long do you reckon he had to, let me ask this a different way. Did he know in advance of the announcement?
Yes.
That the plant was going to close, and if so, how long?
He knew